Have you ever felt like you have too much stuff? You're not alone. And this episode, we'll be talking about simplicity. Stay tuned.
For today's handshake, we want to talk about custody of the mind. To focus our mind and heart on Christ and God's will takes a lot of prayer, practice, and diligent focus on what we allow into our mind. Just like a man doesn't let just anybody into his home, so too should we not just let any thought or idea run amok in our mind. So this takes practice, it takes focus. From the base level of not allowing impure thoughts to, again, run untamed, or even our desires for certain ideas to be left unchecked. So as a man, we have to learn to practice custody of the mind. That means controlling your mind so that we can do that which is more prudent, that which our responsibilities require throughout the day to focus on God and to focus on living a better life.
Welcome to another episode of The Catholic Gentleman. I'm your host, Sam Guzman, and along with my co-host, John Heinen. And today we are going to talk about a fun topic, that of living simply. But before we get there, we want to encourage you to subscribe on your platform of choice, whether that's YouTube or your podcast player. And be sure to hit the bell on YouTube for notifications when we release new content. And leave us a review as well on your podcast platforms. Those really help us out. They help us get a little more attention with the algorithm. We really appreciate that. And then if you've enjoyed these podcasts and you've benefited from them, please consider supporting us financially on Patreon. Doesn't have to be much. $5 goes a long way towards helping us continue to produce high quality content like this. So check us out at patreon.com/catholicgentleman. We've got a lot of great tiers, a lot of great rewards for our supporters. So we would really value your support.
Awesome. So talking about living simply, right? Kind of fighting consumerism is the theme of this episode. And we've talked previously on other episodes on how, you know, this kind of consumerist needing to consume keeps us down, right? Holds us in bondage. We are called to be creators. We're called to be to produce things. But we find ourselves being, you know, kind of caged or you know, kept from doing those things because of our consumerist mentality and how he, at least here in America, I'd say how we've been conditioned. And so breaking free of these chains is likely going to be a lifelong struggle, but we thought we'd start with something today.
Yes, right. So. Well, you know, there's a shocking statistic, and statistics are always a dangerous thing. So someone's going to look this up and correct me. But yeah. But I heard a statistic once that, like, the average American has 80% of Americans, I should say, have a storage unit.
Yeah.
Because they have so much stuff, they can't fit it in their house anymore.
Wow.
Also, Americans typically have 300,000 items that they own in their home.
Yeah.
And you see this, you know, maybe that sounds shocking, but you drive through your neighborhood. If the garage is open, your neighbor's house, he's probably got his garage completely filled up with stuff.
Yeah.
In my neighborhood, that's the case.
Boxes.
You know, and my wife and I are pretty ruthless about, you know, going through things periodically and getting rid of stuff that we don't need. And yet stuff just seems to spontaneously generate.
That's right.
You just think, you know, you're down to the essentials, yeah. And then you open a closet and all this stuff comes falling out. And you're just drowning in stuff. And
that's
it's
right.
Like we have so much abundance in the Western world. It's really difficult to keep that in check and to live simply. Not to mention the fact you've got Black Friday and you've got all these killer sales, you know, end of year clearance sales and, you know, just advertisements promising you, you'll be happy if you just get this one more thing. And it's just kind of seeps into our psyche at some point where we have this restlessness and discontent where we have to just keep getting more. One more thing and I'll be happy. One more thing and I'll have enough. And it just kind of becomes like pathological at some point. Like, we just got to break free of this and really get back to the essentials of life.
Yeah, well, last my count was 290,000 things. So I'm 10,000 shy. So I'm pretty good.
You got to step today on these stats.
Exactly. Yeah. But I find that so true. And it's exactly right. And I know that, you know, one of the things that I think in calling awareness to this is the psychological effect of owning things and what it has on us. Yeah. I was thinking about Father Innocent, who was on a recent episode of ours, who talked about that when he was freed from attachment to his that which he owned and his ownership of things, that he said the idea of stripping yourself from sin just came naturally to him.
Yes.
And even the attachment to sin started to be far less because of his lack of ownership.
Yeah.
And so I've reflected on that quite a bit. And Father Innocent, if you don't know, he's a Franciscan Friar of the Renewal. And so as a part of joining their order, they actually have to sell every single thing they own. Every single thing that they have or have possessed in their life, they actually have to get rid of before they join this order.
Wow,
so it's extreme. And but there's a reason for it, right? Because, you know, and at the same time, we think about different movies where you've got like the Jedis and they have to be, you know, removed from attachments to any things of this world, right?
Yeah.
The reason being is that our possessions call to us.
Yes.
Brought that up on that book episode, is that every single thing we have in our home in some way, shape, or form calls to us and we identify with. So it can be from the smallest of things of like the table that you use to eat on, and when it gets a scratch, your annoyance in that scratch, to a shirt that you really like or a sweater that you really like that gets eaten by a moth, a true experience that happened to me recently, and it caused anger in me that this moth... A moth just living its life is glorifying God, right? Somehow glorified God in putting a hole in one of my favorite sweaters. And that's never happened to me before, but I do remember, and my wife, if she ever listens to this episode, will laugh because it brought a certain degree of anger within me. And who do I take that out on? Like, not the moth. I mean, I don't know where he went. But again, as these possessions attach us to the things of this world and keep us from focusing our minds on the things of the world to come. So
everything you own owns you to some degree.
Yeah.
You know, you get a brand new car, every little pebble that bounces on the road and hits your car, you know, like someone opens the door in the parking lot and slams into your car and you're like, oh, my beautiful car, you know, and it's just like this anxiety is produced. And the greater your possessions are, the greater that anxiety. So let's say you have a yacht, you know, you're a millionaire and you got your beautiful new yacht sitting in the harbor. There's a bad storm blows through, you're going to be super anxious about the status of your yacht. Was it destroyed in the storm or whatever?
That's right.
And so that's why people get insurance. You know, well, I have this beautiful new car or this motorcycle or this yacht. I got to insure this baby because, you know, something might happen to it. So there's just this whole degree of anxiety that goes along with everything that
anxiety.
You possess.
Mm.
And as Christ said, you know, moth and rust doth corrupt, you know, as you learn the hard way. So like everything that we own is tending towards decay. And that produces anxiety within us. We want to preserve it. We want to keep it nice. It does something to you psychologically. And there's just a weight there. Sometimes you look around your house and there's just clutter.
Yeah.
And you're like, where did this even come from?
Exactly.
And it's like visually stressful sometimes to just see how much we have. And that's why my wife and I are like always trying to, you know, purge. But it's still just like, again, just seems to spontaneously generate.
It does.
It's like so much easier to acquire things than it is to get rid of them.
Hence the storage
units. So really be intentional about it in the Western world, because if you're not intentional about it, it's gonna you're just gonna collect stuff.
Like, that's so true. And I think that we find ourselves falling into this cycle, right?
Yes.
Where we don't focus on that which we have, but we focus on that which we want. And I you know, we can be good, well-meaning Catholics, right? who don't necessarily want to keep up with the Joneses. They're not necessarily looking at the neighbor's new car, wishing they had it. Maybe you've been able to remove that desire from within you. But when you look at your own home, when you look at your Amazon wish list, when you look at the various different things, we so frequently are focusing on not which is there beckoning us and calling us and possessions we have, but we find ourselves focused on that which we do not have. And this can go from consumables to collectibles, right? So it can be very frequently that we go over to a friend's house and we have, say a liquor or something like that that we really enjoyed, or we saw a book on their shelf that, oh, I want that, you know? And then you go home and you might have 1,000 books on your bookshelves, 500 which you haven't read yet. Yeah. But you want to have that one.
More.
One.
That's a big problem for me. I'll admit it.
Yeah, and with the alcohol, same thing. You could have 30 different bottles of alcohol, but you tasted that one that you had never had. That sweet elixir, and now you need that as well. And these are just two examples, but it's actually day in and day out throughout our days. If we don't keep ourselves in check, or we're not aware of this, how much we are thinking about the things which we do not have when we have no room in our lives to even physically put more into it.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And and we were talking about this before the show, but this idea of a scarcity mindset, where psychologically, as a survival mechanism, life used to be really hard for people before industrialization and easy abundance. But people used to subsistence farm, or they would have to can food for the winter. And if you didn't have enough food in your pantry for the winter, you would literally starve and die.
Yeah.
And likewise, and say you were millennia ago when people were hunter-gatherers and things like that. Like, if you didn't kill your dinner for the evening, you were going to starve.
Yeah.
So it was literally like, I must have something or I'm going to die. And it's kind of burned into our psychology now that we have to have in order to survive. Well, of course, that's no longer true. We have grocery stores. We have, restaurants. We have food easily available to us. It's not a matter of checking the harvest. It's not a matter of killing your daily bread, so to speak, or your daily meat.
Yeah.
But it is a matter of that psychological principle of scarcity is a scary thing.
Yeah.
We must obtain to survive. That's still like burned into our psychology to some level. And we see this with people who came through the Great Depression, where they were always a minute away from starvation or death. Talk about the Dust Bowl, like where I live in Oklahoma. People were extremely poverty stricken. However, then after the Great Depression passed, and post World War II, when there was abundance financially and in other ways, a lot of those people became hoarders.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, I'm talking about like the TV show, like hoarders, like stacked to the ceiling. Why? Because suddenly they had abundance and they were still living with that scarcity mindset. So they just hoarded and it gave them a sense of security.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't go through the Great Depression necessarily, but we have abundance beyond our wildest dreams. Mm. And we still have this scarcity mindset, like burned into our psychology. So it's like we must obtain more in order to feel safe, and to feel secure. And you see this with marketers. Marketers use this principle all the time. Limited edition.
That's right.
Oh, it's limited. I got to get one before they're gone. Yeah. Or Amazon says, only 5 left in stock. Order now in big red letters. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Well, You gotta click buy now, or it won't be there.
Correct, exactly.
Well, of course they're gonna restock probably like the same day.
Right.
But it's scary. It's like it makes you want to act. It makes you want to hit that buy button. So the marketers know this principle of scarcity is incredibly powerful. They use it on us all the time, and we're like sitting ducks to this principle. But we have to be aware of it, and we have to realize that it's not real.
That's right.
there really is no scarcity in the Western developed world now. So
yeah, I completely agree with scarcity, and we see it actually when COVID hit, right?
Yes.
Toilet paper, gone, right? And such an interesting thing, and I know that not going too deep into that, but when people thought the fear of being without, they went and hoarded everything. You would go to the stores. I experienced it recently at when we got our first freeze in Texas, right? And I was going to Walmart just to get, like, I don't know, peanut butter or something. And the chicken, the cheese, the freezer food section, gone.
Yes.
I mean, not even like there was, you know, cow tongue or something that nobody normally eats left. It was just gone.
Yes, right.
People are like, oh, Texas had that horrible freeze last year that, you know, power grids just went out throughout the state. And so this first freeze that happened this year created this fear. And my wife and I talk all the time about the scarcity of how if something really did happen in America that, like, really caused us to be without, we would all die.
Yes.
Like, we are all incapable of
you can't eat your toilet paper.
That's exactly right. And so, well, and we think about Costco and Sam's Club, and it makes sense for families that have, you know, multiple kids and growing families and things like that. But Costco makes a ton of money on people that don't even have kids, right? Because they go, and not only do you get your daily bread, you don't even get your weekly bread, you get your 3 months bread.
Yes,
you
know?
And that is what calls to us. It seeps into our very existence and our very mindset of life. And it's something that we as Catholics, we have to reject. And we have to find ways of rejecting it, because I brought up earlier that we as Catholics become these consumer Catholics, right? Where we are so fearful of being without that the idea of being generous or giving to others becomes more difficult.
Yes.
And I think about, like, Matthew Kelly's great study that he did on the 80-20 principle and how it withholds within the church. And he found that 80% of the finances within the church are covered by, it was under 7%, but like 6.8% or something of the parishioners.
Wow.
And volunteer hours, right? It was 6.4% of the parish covers 80% of the volunteer hours.
Yeah.
And so we're Catholics who know a higher call, who know a higher reality, yet this has affected us to the point where we're not even abiding by a secular 80-20 principle, where 20% are covering 80% of the budget or 20% are covering 80% of the volunteer hours. We're down below 7%. That's pathetic. And we do. We see it as another thing that's triggered me within the church is when I look out at the faces of men in the church, we see this kind of lethargy, we see this malaise, we see this lack of vitality or energy within them at Mass on Sundays, and it begs the question, why?
Yeah.
And then when you get down into it, it's because they're coming to church with a consumerist mindset of, I need to do this to merit eternal salvation.
Yes.
And this is my obligation to get to heaven, instead of going to it with a sense of worship, adoration, awe and wonder, gratefulness and gratitude for Christ the King present in the Holy Eucharist, the sacrament of the altar. And so we find that within ourselves, and you know, and I can accuse myself of many of the things we've talked about, but being able to understand this higher calling that we as Catholics are called to is so paramount and important for our eternal reward and for our salvation and for doing what Christ has called us to do.
Yeah. And I think you're so right, and we can bring this consumer mindset to the faith, absolutely. And I think, why is this? I think we have to realize to what a degree we're programmed by advertising and things like that. Basically, advertising exists to steal your happiness.
Mm-hmm.
You're happy, you're content, I've got enough, and then you see an ad.
That's right.
And all of a sudden you're restless, you're discontent. Oh, I need that.
All right.
And oftentimes it works at a subconscious level. We're not even consciously aware that these ads are doing it to us, but all of a sudden we just feel this restlessness. Mm-hmm. Or the upgrade cycle.
Yeah.
I have an iPhone 12, big, beautiful screen, long-lasting battery, powerful processor, most amazing phone ever, and then they come out with the iPhone 13.
That's right.
Darn it! Now I've got one number behind, even though there's absolutely nothing wrong with that phone.
Like,
correct. It's absolutely a miracle of technology. Mm-hmm. It's not the iPhone 13,
right,
which only has like 2 seconds longer battery life and a 0.01 megapixel better camera.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just,
it
eats at us. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I just got the latest. But you can say, oh, well, like you said, that's not me. I'm a Catholic. I don't do that.
Mm.
Okay, fine. But we also bring that consumerist mindset to the faith in the sense of, I need another rosary. I need to upgrade my rosary. All I have is this cheap 10-year-old rosary. You know, maybe it'll break in my pocket. I better get a new one.
Mm.
So then you get on and Google and can I have, oh, that one's nice, but this one's nicer. Ooh, but this one has a crucifix I like better. Well, I like the color of these beads better.
That's right.
And before you know it, you're like bringing your consumerist mindset to shopping for Catholic goods, or I'm going to plaster my walls with Catholic artwork.
Mm.
So instead of shopping on Amazon, I'm just going to, you know, buy Catholic artwork, and that'll like sate my need for something new and novel.
Yeah.
But you know, or if I just had one more book and I listened to one more podcast, then I would be really holy.
Yeah.
But holiness is always one more Catholic book away. Holiness is always one more podcast or interview away. It's one more video series or program away. And really, we sell stuff in the Catholic Gentleman's Store, full disclosure.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and we have a podcast that we're recording right now, right?
Yes.
But the point being is that we need to be careful.
Yeah.
We need to be aware. We need to not sleepwalk through life.
Yes.
And think that all is well, that we're not consumers, when we really have just brought the same mentality to the faith.
That's right.
And what we really need to do is realize, when it comes to holiness, we have everything that we need.
Yeah.
We have the sacraments, you know, freely available at every Catholic parish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can pray anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, all the ingredients from holiness are there. We just have to take advantage of them. But sometimes it's harder to do the inner spiritual work.
Yes.
To grow, and it can be a painful thing. So let's just buy another book.
That's right.
Or listen to another talk. That's a good substitute. No. Like, those things can be aids to us.
Yeah.
And hopefully they are. But we just need to make sure that we're not using them as substitutes for the actual work of spiritual growth. Because truth be told, you really don't need another book. You really don't need another rosary. Like, in essence.
Yes.
Now, those things are blessings. They're nice. They can benefit us. I have a lot of books. You know,
yeah.
I have more rosaries than I know what to do with. But but the point is, let's get back to the essentials.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think that this just affects so much everywhere in our life. And it does become, to a degree, sinful and in various different ways, right? And I know that in many cases, it's not hard to justify, right?
Right.
It's not hard to justify getting the next rosary because it's a sacramental.
Yes.
And I can do so much good with it. But I've got 10 fingers, praise God, and I could just pray on my fingers. Yeah, or
right.
Rope rosaries that cost nothing, you know, are just as good. And in fact, and maybe not intentionally here, but every single thing we do is an investment in our time or our money. And are we turning it over to God first before we click that buy now, one click
yes,
button?
Right.
Because the issue is who can we be helping with it? What if we as Catholics gave God our first fruits, like
yes.
it talks about in the Old Testament, right? We're not even giving 10%. I think the average, again, in that Matthew Kelly study, I think the average giving in Catholic is about 2% of their income. And what if we gave 10%? And I'm not going into the issue of God requires all and maybe you can't. Maybe you have to start at 2% and we need to grow towards that 10%. But what if we understood that 100% of everything we got was from a generous, loving God, and we were not focused on storing up things of this earth, like the saints, but we were focused on storing up things in heaven,
yes.
And the things of this earth didn't matter because they pass away, and the things of heaven is where we should be focusing our attention on day in and day out. And by the way, at the Catholic Gentleman, we say it at every episode, be a man, be a saint. That's what we are called to do. And so this sort of growth in our own spirituality is something that we're called to do. And I guess I'm just thinking right now of Jesus and the loaves and fishes, right?
Yes.
And that that story of the feeding of the 5,000 didn't include women and children. And so this man came to Jesus and said, what are these to all so many, right?
Yes, right.
Two fish and five loaves. Like, what are these to so many? And Jesus was like, enough. You know, it's what I want. And by the way, I'll take it all.
Yep.
Because that's what Jesus requires of us. That's what our faith requires of us, is that 100% of our time, 100% of our attention, 100% of our goods and our wealth are given back to God and in thanksgiving and in gratefulness. And when we understand that and we move that direction, we can start living a day in and day out holy life. And that's what I think I'm calling our listeners and myself in this moment to something greater. So
I love the story in the Gospels, because the disciples were coming at it with, again, a scarcity mindset. There's not enough. But then when it was given to Christ, he was able to multiply it to the point where there were 12 baskets conveniently left over. And it was like, it was kind of like Jesus' like not so subtle way of saying, you can never outdo me in generosity.
Right.
Give me what you have, and I will always outdo you in generosity. And you can see this principle too, where, like, again, you know, I've been there in my life where my wife and I are barely scraping by.
Yeah.
And the thought of tithing is almost like painful.
Yes.
Like, oh, really? I got to put something in the offering basket. You know, it was scary. Like, I don't know how we're even going to pay our bills, much less, you know, give to the church. And yet every time in my life, every time you choose to make that sacrifice to return to God of the blessings that he's given you, he will always outdo you in generosity. Always. You will always find abundance that you never expected.
Yeah.
But you got to take that step of faith sometimes and step out and give. And God will, you know, give and it will be given to you.
Yeah.
And it is the spiritual principle. It's like a spiritual law. And it's a, that verse says, given will be given to you, you know, pressed down, shaken over. It's basically talking about like the, a glass of wine just like overflowing.
Yeah.
Just because there's just so much God's giving back to you. For every little mite that you give him, he gives you a tenfold in return.
So true. So. And we're in Lent here in this episode. And why does the church have Lent? And one of it is, you know, one of the three principles are almsgiving, right? And the church requires it of us to give to the poor. And they've set aside these 40 days where it is mandatory for us to focus on this. Now, devout Catholics understand the appreciation of giving and asceticism and dying to pleasures and our addictions throughout the year, right? It's not just every Lent. But it just shows that the church in her wisdom sets aside this as a way for us to die to ourselves and to give to others. You know, so make that something, if you haven't been giving during Lent, right? Make that a priority. It is a requirement. It is something that we have to do. And again, I'm not talking about if you've only been giving 2%, all of a sudden giving 10%. I understand that the emotional rift and psychological difficulties and maybe even lifestyle difficulties that you're not capable of making that adjustment right now, but move it to 3%, you know, give a little bit more. And then also I want to encourage our listeners to avoid the mindset, because I've been in the exact same situation that Sam is mentioning with my wife and I, where we were making very little money and we had another child on the way. And, you know, we were praying daily, begging God for his taking care of fruit. Yeah. Yeah, exactly, to take care of us. And it was super difficult. Mm-hmm. And we did, more times than I can count, talk about not giving because of our, you know, poverty here and now. But we always had to work against that in faith, that God was going to give us what we needed. He was going to take care of us. And that is such a beautiful thing. So don't have the mindset of when I make $90,000 a year, then I will start giving $9,000. That's when I'll do it,
yes,
right?
Right?
Basically, when I have an overabundance in my subjective thought process, then I can give back, right? Start giving back now, because the generous heart is a heart onto God and is a heart that lives a happier, holier, and more joy-filled life.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, the three tools of the spiritual life that we're reminded of in Lent are prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. Yeah. And really, those are supposed to be the baseline of the Christian life. Mm. Those aren't just for Lent. Lent is an intensification of those things, perhaps, but they should really just be present in all of our lives at all times.
That's true.
And so when we talk about almsgiving, it isn't just a Lenten practice. Like, we really need to be generous as Christians. We are called to give. And people say, well, does that mean I can't ever be wealthy or, like, ever enjoy, you know, the gifts of this earth or whatever? No, but what we need to do is make sure that we're being grateful for what we have. You know, mm-hmm. I love that Chesterton quote where he says, the aim of life is appreciation.
Yeah.
And there's no point and having more things if you don't appreciate them.
That's right.
Or appreciate the things that you do have. And, you know, if you don't appreciate what you have, it's chances are God's not going to give you any more.
That's right.
You know, just to waste it on somebody who's ungrateful, you know. So be content. Mm. Seek to cultivate the virtue of contentment. And God will bless you inevitably.
So true. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think just a word of understanding in this situation that I pulled in thought here is the Exodus story, right? And again, consumerist mindset, right? So the Jews had been freed by God through all of this intense, you know, plagues and everything like that. They've been freed from God from bondage, right? And did they go cross the Red Sea into paradise or into the, you know, the land of milk and honey? No, they went into the desert. And they went into the desert for not 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, but 40 years,
yes.
Right? Because they were having to die to themselves, die to their desires. But I know in Exodus, it talks about how the people of God grumbled against God and said, why did you take us out here to die? Better we should go back to Egypt where we can have our fill of flesh and, you know, and food. Basically, let us go back into bondage where we can have that abundance of flesh and food and the freedom that God's calling us to, or the promised land that's going to be so much greater.
Yeah.
But if you're in this desert, know that it takes years
yes.
to break ourselves
yeah.
from these habits. And we're in the process of breaking ourselves from them. And every time we do these episodes, I'm you know, reignited with something that I've forgotten for maybe a few years,
yes.
you know, and haven't been intentionally practicing and working towards in my life. And this is one of them, right? Is that, yes, I'll do Lent, I'll do Exodus 90, I'll add an extra 30 days of, you know, fasting or of abstinence from something, you know, throughout the year, but it's not a continuous part of my day in and day out existence, and it needs to be, right? But be weary of that mindset of falling back. This is too hard, or I'm not seeing anything better in this life, so I'm going to go back to purchasing, because then at least then I had that momentary happiness and that momentary security,
right.
You know, of things. So I think that Exodus story is so great for us to reflect on during this Lenten time, but throughout all of life, and realize when you're dying to your consumerist habits, in this case, it's going to take a long time for you to reap the full fruits and benefits. That doesn't mean that you're not going to start experiencing a happier life, but to like really be shed of it, it's that lifelong battle.
Yes. And I think too, you know, the why did God send them into the desert like you're talking about? Mm. There was a sense in which the desert was a scary place. Mm. The desert is a place where death is always right around the corner. If you don't get enough food, you don't get enough water, you're toast. And you think about thousands of people in the desert and how hard it would be to feed that many people and to give water to that many people on a daily basis. Basically, what God was wanting them to do is, you know, 40 is like a number of purification in the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus went and fasted for 40 days in the desert. He's getting like kind of that experience of being radically dependent on God. It can be purifying for us. And in our lives, our lives tend to be cyclical, where we go through seasons that recur. And one of those seasons is like a desert season, where we may come off of a period of abundance and all of a sudden we feel that radical dependence on God. And we call out to him like you were describing, please provide. I'm radically dependent on you.
Yeah.
And then he does. And then we forget God. We get fat and lazy spiritually.
Right.
And think that we've got this all under control. And then all of a sudden that desert season recurs. And it's like, Oh, I better call on God again. You know, and we so easily forget God in our comfort and abundance. So there's something purifying about that simplicity of being completely dependent on God for your daily bread. I think that these seasons, even of leanness financially, can be faith building if we allow them to be.
That's so true. They can, faith building, well stated. They can be purifying as well. And so continuing on this thought process of practically how we should live and what we should be doing that we've been kind of talking about, you know, here or there, I'm reminded of a G.K. Chesterton quote as well, where he said, there are two ways to get enough, and one is to continually acquire, and the other way is to desire less.
Yes.
And I think that we're at a point where, psychologically speaking, we have to work towards desiring less. And so I encourage you to pray. I encourage our listeners to bring this to prayer and say, you know, I do want to desire less. And maybe you think you don't have a lot of desires. Bring that to prayer as well and say, God, I feel like I'm good enough. I feel like I've got, I've rid myself of this consumerist desires that they're talking about on the Catholic Channel. I would bring that to prayer as well, because chances are there's always a deeper level of purification that we can that we can undergo. And so that's going to be my first suggestion, is to pray. My second one is going to be more thankful in life, right?
Yes.
The person that looks around at all of their possessions and gives thanks is a person that's going to realize they don't need all of these possessions.
Yes.
So be thankful for that which you have. It's also going to be, I guess, more immediate. You're not going to desire more because you're spending time focused on that which you have, the possessions that you have. And maybe you're going to be looking at it and be like, why do I still have this, right?
Yes.
That happened to me in my letter jacket that I had in high school, right? Happened about a year ago where we were looking through a box that we hadn't opened up in 5 or 6 years. And there is my letter jacket from high school. And it's like, why am I holding on to this letter jacket from when I was 18 years old? When this jacket could be used to keep somebody else warm.
Yes.
But it was pride, you know, it was an attachment to the past, but it was also a certain degree of pride because I had accomplished so much in my high school life. Well, that was nothing in comparison to the children that God has given me and the life he has given me now. And so be thankful for the things that you have, be looking through them. And then the third thing that I recommend is be more generous, right?
Yeah.
Find time to give to others, give to your church at a greater degree, give to, without expecting anything back, right? I know that's something that we're struggling with nowadays, is this idea is I'm giving to my church, but I disagree with how the church is spending it, or I disagree with the direction the church is going, therefore I'm going to withhold this. It's also the wrong mindset.
Yes.
Because first off, what happens is is we don't give it to anyone then. We don't find another nonprofit that's doing great work and give it. We just don't make time for that. We just decide that we're not going to give to our local church. But first off, you're not giving to your local church because you agree with everything that they're doing. You're giving because it's our obligation as Catholics.
You're giving to God through your church.
Correct. Yeah. Thank you. You're giving to God through your church. And so so those would be my three things is start desiring less, right? Start praying about that, bringing that to prayer. Start being more thankful in life, grateful for the things that God has given you, the abundance of the earth, all things that he has given us for his glory, and then start giving back, you know, start being more generous in life. Be it just encouraging people, thanking or talking about, you know, how great they look on a particular day, but also financially and monetarily speaking as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, the gratitude is so key because it really helps us cultivate a sense of wonder for the gifts that we have.
Yeah.
You know, I've been living in my house for several years. Mm. And according to the world standards, it's not a spectacular house. Mm. You know? Mm. But every time I come home, like, I just try to give thanks to God for the home that he's given me. Yeah. You know, there's people who have their houses repossessed. There's people who've been foreclosed yeah. on. There's people who can't afford to buy a house. The fact that I even have a house is a gift. Yeah. Like, give thanks for that. So I practice a thing where I write three things that I'm thankful for mm-hmm. every day. And usually, sometimes they're the same things, sometimes they're new things. Doesn't matter. Point is, I'm grateful for what I have. And it really has, like, radically changed my way of seeing the world. So yeah. I would definitely second the gratitude. The other thing I would say is be mindfully aware that consumerism is an epidemic in our culture.
Yes.
And again, it only works because it works below the conscious level. We're not aware that we're doing it.
Correct.
So cultivate this awareness that every impulse that you have doesn't need to be acted upon. Mm-hmm. There's this great Viktor Frankl quote where he says, you know, between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space lies our growth and our freedom. Mm. And I think that's so true, especially when it comes to shopping. Like, Amazon wants to remove that space.
Yes.
They want you to have an impulse and to act on it immediately. That's why they have one-click shopping and, you know, one-day shipping and all of these things that make acquiring things so darn easy.
Yeah, frictionless. Yeah.
If you could have a thought and the package would show up on your door, if Amazon could figure out a way to do that, they would do that.
They would.
But fortunately, they haven't gotten there quite yet. But the point being is, like, we have to cultivate a check on our impulses, expand that space through yeah. the power of awareness. I want to buy that. Oh, no, actually, yeah. do I really need that?
Right.
And start creating some checks and balances. So one simple way to do this is to put it in your Amazon cart and sleep on it.
Yeah.
I've done this more times than I can count, and I find I actually don't need that thing that's sitting in the Amazon cart, and I'll hit delete. You know, same thing with shopping at the store. We don't realize this, but product placement in stores is an absolute science.
Yes.
We get groceries from Walmart sometimes. Milk and eggs, the essentials,
yeah.
they're in the back
part
of the store.
This back, yeah, exactly.
And there's a
yep.
reason for that, because they want you to walk through the entire store and see all kinds of other things that you need before you get to those basic staples like eggs and
yeah.
milk. And it works every time. You know,
right.
there's been so many times when I went to Walmart for one thing
mm-hmm.
and left with 15 things, you know, and I'm like, oh, they got me again.
Yeah.
You know, so again, cultivating that awareness and building in checks and balances, even just putting something in your cart and walking around the store for like 20 minutes,
yes.
a lot of times you'll realize you don't actually need it.
Mm-hmm.
So cultivate that awareness and build in some breaks
yeah.
in your life that can slow you down and keep you from just hitting that buy now button. That can really make a big difference. It's good to wait. It's healthy to wait.
And I like this connection that you're already bringing up that connects us closer to actually parenting and how we parent kids, because we have required that of our children. If they want something, and they have the money, right? We have this this saving system, you know, and including giving to the church, but. If they want something, and they have enough money for it, we require them to wait 7 days.
Yes.
They have to want it for 7 days before they're allowed to purchase it.
That's great.
And 50% of the time, by 24 hours, they no longer want it, right? Because we have this temptations of the world, right?
Yes.
Which is calling us from a physical or temptations of the flesh even, you know, that are calling us. And we see it so alive in our kids, but we become dead to the fact that it's still alive in us, and we have to put these stops in place to check ourselves, you know. And I think that's such a good point. Yeah.
There's one other point I want to make too: is be aware of the fact that sight is the sense most powerfully connected with desire.
Yeah.
Which is why visual ads are so powerful. You see a beautiful person in a beautiful home with a nice product, and you want that product all the time.
Yes.
So watch your eyes. What are they focusing on? What are they feeding on? That often indicates what you're going to want in life.
For sure.
And then kind of related to that, remind yourself of what's essential. Read the lives of the saints. Maybe read a minimalist or simple living blog or something like that. Continue to remind yourself of these higher values,
yeah,
rather than the impulsive values that are kind of beneath the surface a lot of times. And that will go a long way to, again, putting the mental brakes on, do I really need this? So
yeah, wonderful. Well, I'm grateful for the time and for the conversation for our listeners here. So we've come to the end of an episode where it's time to discuss a nightcap. And so this is your first time. If it's your 50th time, we're grateful. We like to talk about just manly things that can help us live better, that we appreciate and that can be we can be thankful for. And so
yes.
Today we have a journal.
Yeah.
And so
sort of a journal, more of a day timer.
Yes.
I think if you look up the statistics on how many times people unlock or touch their phones during a day, it's shocking.
Mm.
And so if you're looking for a way to like reduce some screen time, consider maybe getting a paper planner.
Yes.
This is mine. It's called the Monk Manual. I like the way it's laid out. But there's gazillions of these out there. But having a paper timer can reduce screen time.
Yeah.
And how many times have you got it on to check your calendar and then ping, a notification comes in, and all of a sudden you're all distracted? You're not going to get distracted with this. It helps you stay focused. Having a physical day timer can be really just an enjoyable experience, especially if it's a nice one.
Agreed. So. And providentially, we didn't intend on this, but the handshake today was custody of the mind. And
that's
what
right.
Better way to help yourself focus on custody of the mind is when the opportunity to go down rabbit holes is
yes.
reduced.
Yeah.
And so that can help you prudently use your time wisely throughout the day, offering it to God, making sure you are making time for prayer and for holy readings and other things as well. So I appreciate you bringing that, Sam.
Yeah.
So as we end each of our episodes,
be a man, be a saint.
God bless.